Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicy with new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and we have a lot of fun stuff to talk about on today's episode. It is a brand new week. Happy Labor Day. I'm recording this on. Don't know when it'll be uploaded, hopefully soon. You know, with my terrible Wi-Fi at home, I can never get anything uploaded. But nonetheless, on today's episode, we will be recapping all the action from WWE Clash in Paris. A lot of big stuff went down, shaking the very foundation of WWE. We also have another week of Dana White's Contender Series, and fresh off of what I can, you know, like hands down say it was the greatest episode. Like season 9, episode 3 is the greatest Dana White's Contender Series episode I have ever seen of all 9 seasons. I can, you know, assuredly tell you it is the best, and we recapped it last episode, so please go give it a listen. But on today's episode, we give our predictions for episode 4. We also have a bunch of new UFC fights to talk about with you guys today. I'm sure a lot of you already know about them, but nonetheless, we are still going to bring them up. So, a lot of fun stuff to do today. And actually, 5 hours, I'm going to be doing my final shift at the Minnesota State Fair, the biggest get together in all of Minnesota. And it has been an experience, and I don't know how to say this, but I feel like I've actually come around to liking it. You know, I think I'm going to come back next year, maybe years in the future if some of my buddies do. But I think I was a bit too negative at the start just because I hadn't really done too much work as of late. So we're in a good mood. We're super chipper. We're super dapper. And I'm in a really good mood, guys. Let me just tell you. And I get a little flustered talking about all these massive UFC fights we have coming up, at least for the next 2 to 3 months. We don't know about anything in December, but we do know about November and October and a little bit of September. So we have so many fights to talk about. These are going to be in no particular order. Actually, you know what? I am going to do these in particular order. So starting off with some lower level ones. UFC Rio has a new matchup. Ricardo Ramos is taking on Con Offley in the men's featherweight division. Con Offley, I am so confused how he is still in the UFC. This man was runner-up on The Ultimate Fighter and then lost his next UFC fight. So he's 0-2 in the UFC, an 11-4 professional record. He actually won the BFC interim title in whatever fight league that's in, so good for him. But for Ricardo Ramos, he's 8-6 in the UFC, wins over Amin Zahabi, actually, Josh Colalbo, and Bill Algeo. The Amin Zahabi win, definitely the biggest one of his career. And this dude has some nasty knockouts, but just has shown he has some, you know, issues in the grappling department at times. If people can weather the striking, they can get him out of there. So I think this is a good test to see who can belong in the UFC. Both guys are right around that 30-year-old age mark, so we'll see what happens in that one going down in Rio. This one, UFC Vegas 111 on November 8th. That is right. We're getting a 110 Apex and a 111 Apex, both of them to open up November. Not very exciting. Not whatsoever, but the number 8 ranked women's bantamweight Mayra Bueno Silva takes on the number 11th ranked Jacqueline Cavalcante. And Jacqueline has come in 4-0. Wins over Julia Vila, Josie Nunez, and Nora Cornelli. 9-1 record. She's been on an absolute tear. And as for Mayra Bueno Silva, after starting out her UFC career pretty impressively, I mean, she went on to actually fight for the Women's Bantamweight Championship. She's just been on a terrible run as of late. I mean, losing to Raquel Penton, losing to Macy Chison. It has been a rough going for Bueno Silva. But with a record of 10-5, this is do or die. She has officially joined the Fighting Nerds. And as we've seen with Michael Olka Jacek, the Fighting Nerds can turn your entire career around. So we'll see how this one goes, but this one will be on the main card, I presume, of UFC Vegas 111, but I will ride with Cavalcante at the moment. UFC Rio has another banger. This is going to be one of my favorite fight nights of the year as the number 14th ranked heavyweight Walter Walker, who said, I don't even want to rank. I don't want to rank Defoted. Oh, he's such a legend. 3-1 in the UFC with all of his wins coming by ankle lock. He'll be taking on Muhammad Usman, 4-2 in the UFC, wins over Hamdi Abdulwahab, Junior Tafa, and Jake Collier. Most recently beat Hamdi Abdulwahab. Actually won season 30 of The Ultimate Fighter. Is still looking to get some traction. I mean, this guy has the power. He clearly has the skill set, and it just doesn't translate. Like, I'm actually so shocked that this guy is just not as good as we think he is. This is not going to go well for him. Okay, Valtor is 14-1. Out of his 14 wins, he might have a 100% finish rate. I think it's maybe at 12 or 13. He's been on absolute tear, and after watching his brother, Johnny Walker, finally pick up a win, you know he's going to be more motivated than ever. So I am going to pick Valtor Walker here. Early prediction, I could say flat off the bat, especially with how easy he beat Kenny and Chukwu, and I think Kenny and Chukwu has better striking than Mohamed Usman, but hey, it's MMA. You can always see upsets. Quick turnaround for Alexander Hernandez, lightweight, will be taking on Carlos Ferreira, Diego Ferreira, at UFC Noche. And I believe Ferreira was linked to, yeah, he was supposed to fight Bobby King Green. That fight fell apart, and now he's turning around against Alexander Hernandez, who just snapped the 5-fight winning streak of Chase Hooper, absolutely breaking my heart. 17-8 professional record for Hernandez. He's 9-7 in the UFC. Wins over Oliver Aubin-Mercier, Benil Dariush, and Jimbo. Like, this guy has some good wins. We forget. And as for Ferreira, 10-6 in the UFC, 19-6 professionally. Wins over Matheus Rebeque, Anthony Pettis, Michael Johnson. Yeah, legend of the game. I'm probably going to ride with Hernandez there, but hey, like we've said before, anything can happen. Recent matchup announced officially for the fight night going down November 22nd. That is UFC Qatar. That's right, we have our first official matchup for that UFC Qatar card, and it is Abdulrahman Yagyayev, the man who got a 30-second knockout on last week's Dana White's Contender Series episode. The 7-0 light heavyweight will be taking on Rafael Sequeira. Rafael Sequeira is 0-3 in the UFC, and he has legit been brought in just to be knocked out in all of his matchups. I know Ibo Aslan knocked him out. I know Modestus Bukakis knocked him out. Someone else knocked him out. Who else knocked out Rafael Sequeira? Was it Brenson Ribeiro? I don't know, but this dude is literally 11-0. He came in 11-0 to the UFC, all wins by finish, and has since just been an embarrassment. He has just been awful. Oh my gosh, he lost recently to the guy who, Julius Walker, someone who recently beat him in a decision. So they're bringing him in to get utterly destroyed by the Turkish Abdulrahman Yakyayev, and I absolutely love it. UFC Qatar, November 22nd. And one more matchup for that UFC Vegas 110 card going down November 1st. Azalan Nascimento, that is right. Piero also in the flyweight division is back. The 3-1 flyweight has just not fought him for the longest period of time, takes on the 14-0 Rafael Estevam. 3-0 in the UFC with wins over Charles Johnson, Felipe Bunez, and Jesus Aguilar. Looking to move to 15-0 and get a ranking spot with a win over Alan Nascimento. But let's get into our big six, if you want to call it that. These are the biggest matchups we've had announced. And let's start at the bottom of the, you know, totem pole. And this one's more unfortunate. UFC Noche has lost its co-main event. Rob Font versus Raul Rosas Jr. Raul is injured, tragically. And so stepping into replacement will be David Martinez. David did win his UFC debut over Samuel Oliveira, which isn't too hard to do. He's 12-1 professionally. And I hate to say it, that he's just a little green. He is just a little green. You know, Raul Rosas Jr. was going to be a big underdog coming in, and I just know David is going to be an even bigger underdog. Rob Font, the 19-fat UFC veteran. Wow. Coming in for his 20th one. Wins over Adrian Yanez, Kyler Phillips, and Cody Garbrandt. Who did he recently knock off? He recently defended himself against some up-and-comer. He's a really good prospect, you know, Dutour. He's a really great gatekeeper. And with a record of 22-8, I do not see him losing in this matchup. But I don't know if this is still going to be the co-main event now. We'll have to see what UFC Noche does, as that fight night is actually coming up in 12 days. It just creeps up on you sometimes. But here we are, the big five. The big five is going to turn into the big two, the big three. But here we are going down UFC 321 in Abu Dhabi, October 25th. The 18-1, number one ranked bantamweight, Umar Nurmagomedov, back after his first career defeat to take on the 16-2, 8-fight winning streak, the man, the myth, the legend, the number 8 ranked Mario Bautista. That's right, Mario Bautista beating Jose Aldo, Ricky Simon, most recently Patchy Mix. You know, if you want excitement, Mario hasn't really been exciting, but I'll tell you, 16-2 record. The last time he lost, He was 8-2. So Mario Bautista has been an absolute savage, and here he is taking on Umar Nurmagomedov. And, you know, it's safe to say the winner of this could get the next title shot. Really could, after Petr Yan. But bantamweight is just going to be this ever, you know, looming cycle of everyone fighting Merab and losing to Merab. I don't really see anyone but Umar beating Merab, as Umar won the first two rounds over Merab Dovizioso. You know, obviously faded when it got deeper into the later rounds, but he has proven, out of everyone I've seen, and I'll even say more so than Marlon Moraes, more so than Ricky Simone, who actually holds a win over Merab, more so than any of these guys, that he can hang with Merab Dovizioso. And I mean, he's the cousin of Khabib. Him and Islam are boys. Umar is coming back for some vengeance. But hey, Mario Bautista, gotta give it to him. He has been on an absolute tear, and we'll see if he can finally get the one big win he's been hunting for. Another matchup for you. This one, the co-main event of UFC 321 for the vacant women's strawweight title. In the co-main event, Virna Jandidova, the number one ranked woman's strawweight, takes on the number six ranked Mackenzie Dern. That is right. We are going to mention why the belt is vacant, but you are going to see two Brazilians go at it. I know Mackenzie Dern is technically from Florida, but I consider her Brazilian. And hey, she's coming off a big win over Amanda Ribas. Virna Jandidova has been on an absolute tear, knocking off Yan Chonin and Amanda Lemos, for example. And I'm going to root so hard for Mackenzie Dern. I don't know why, but Virna Jandidova is just not exciting to me at all. So I'm going to be rooting my absolute tail off for Mackenzie Dern to win this belt. Actively biased. October 25th, this is a good matchup. And people are probably wondering, like, oh, why is Mackenzie Dern getting a title shot over Yan Chonin, Amanda Lemos, Tatiana Suarez? Maybe because all three of those women just lost for the belt in awful fashion. Like, all three of them combined, I think, won two rounds in, of the 15 rounds that Zhang Weili has fought in last. I think she's lost maybe two of them. I mean, it's been absolutely crazy. And as for Mackenzie Dern, she's just one of the last people that hasn't fought for the belt. So I absolutely love it. It should be a fun co-main event before we get into Tom Aspinall and Cyril Gane. And yeah, we are going to definitely be rooting for Mackenzie Dern. Now, switching over, UFC 322, the big three fights on UFC 322. I can't believe we're getting this. If you told me in April we'd be getting this, I'd have called you a liar. But at UFC 322... in Madison Square Garden, November 15th, the number four ranked welterweight, Leon Rocky Edwards, takes on the nightmare assassin, Carlos Prates, 22-7, 5-1 in the UFC, coming off of that dirty knockout of Jeff Neal. Carlos Prates is back. This man lost a brutal decision to Ian Garry, didn't come alive till the final two rounds, and here he is, completely revitalizing, and now he might even jump Ian Garry in the rankings if he wins this. Crazy, utterly crazy what you can do with activity and being exciting. I mean, it's wild. It really is wild. Like, Ian Garry has maybe been linked to a fight with Sean Brady. That's it. That is it. That's all the news we've heard on Ian Garry. And here Carlos Prates is leaping at opportunities, trying to do what he can, and I freaking love it. Leon Edwards is kind of on a rough streak, and you can even say that since 2020, Leon Edwards has just had just rough times. You know, the Nate Diaz fight, he's only remembered for having a punch landed on, which almost knocked him out. Then obviously he fights Usman, loses every round, then eventually lands the big knockout, and that knockout completely has saved and become his entire career. Obviously puts on a very lackluster trilogy fight with him. He then puts on a very lackluster title defense against Colby Covington and then loses the belt to Bilal Muhammad in awful fashion. Earlier this year, he was also submitted by Sean Brady. Leon Edwards has been in a rough spot, and how do they reward him? With none other than Carlos Prates. But after watching the Ian Garry fight, if Carlos Prates is not dialing it up, Leon Edwards can distance strike, distance kick, maybe even try and land a take down or two, and he can win this. But you already know we're riding with our boy Carlos Prates. The nightmare is just too nasty, and he reps the Fighting Nerds, and we are a big Fighting Nerds fan on this channel. Two more fights for you, and this one is the co-main event for UFC 322. I'm going to say this right now, it's going to be probably the best pay-per-view of the year. They are loading up for a double women's championship opportunity as Zhang Weili is moving up to women's flyweight, which you have to officially vacate the belt. But as we learned with Ia Topuria, they still acknowledge you as being a double champ just because, you know, they don't want to have the division left uncensored. So Ia Topuria was able to pose with both belts. Once Zhang Weili beats Valentina Shevchenko, she going to be posing with two belts. That is right. Valentina Shevchenko will defend her women's flyweight championship against the current women's strawweight champion, Zhang Weili. And this is the number one, number two pound-for-pound women on the planet. This is insane. I really wish this would have been the co-main event under Amanda Nunes and Kayla Harrison, but I'll still take it under Islam and JDM, which we're going to mention in a second. But Valentina has been on an absolute tear. I mean, her only defeat was to Alexa Grasso by shock and upset. That's, I think, her only loss in the last 8-9 years, like something ridiculous. Obviously, nothing too exciting with her defense against Man and Fiora. And as for Zhang Weili, she's been dominating Tatiana, Lemos, Carlos Barza, Joanna Janjacek. She's been running through everyone, but, you know, kind of has just been destroying her opponents, not in the most exciting fashion, but more just smothering them, you know, TKOing them, can't get them out of there. So I'll be interested to see what happens here, maybe if there's a size difference between them. But 24-4 with one draw for Valentina. It's her professional record, 26-3 for Zhang Weili. Somehow, just somehow, they have the exact same MMA record of 29 professional fights, and they are both going to be competing for a double championship in their 30th professional fight. You can't even write this. It's amazing. I'm so excited. And yes, you heard me tease it, but the main event for UFC 322 is for the welterweight championship. Another double championship opportunity as JDM will defend against Islam Makhachev. And we've already seen Islam leave his belt, you know, leave it in the past. You know, you can have it. He's going on to things at welterweight. And by the way, he is on a 15-fight winning streak. He will tie Anderson Silva if he wins this. I believe he's at 15, or is he at 14? I swore it was at 15 last time I checked, but Islam is 27-1. Most recently just destroyed Moicano, and they weren't even going to give Armin another shot. And they're like, yeah, let's just give Islam this double opportunity. Bilal lost. This is a favorable matchup for Islam. The only way you're going to see JDM, who, by the way, is on an 18-fight winning streak, 8-0 in the UFC. The only way you're going to see him win, sadly, is on the feet. Grappling is just too far in advance for Islam, but we'll see what the size difference looks when these two get in there. But I'm very excited for this matchup. JDM, Islam going down at Madison Square Garden, November 15th. Lock it in. Book it down. We are going. So yes, those are all the new UFC fights that we have and had announced over the last 4 or 5 days. I mean, Dana White has been blessing us with so many fights, and I absolutely love it. I'm excited for all of these, and we will be covering each and every one of them on the podcast. But we have other things to talk about because there are new fights going down that we are going to be watching literally tomorrow. So these might already have already happened. So technically my predictions may be coming out after they've happened. I don't know when I'm going to get this uploaded, but we do have season 9, episode 4 of Dana White's Contender Series. We have 5 new matchups to talk about with you guys. Let's waste no time. Kicking us off, featherweight division to open up the show as Tommy Gunn McMillan will be taking on David Mgoyan. M-G-O-Y-A-N. Mgoyan? Goyan? Maybe the M is silent or the G Moyan? I don't know. I'll have to see how the announcer announces it. But both these men, odds makers have it close. Minus 105 for Tommy, minus 115 for David. Let's start with Tommy McMillan. Tommy is 6 feet tall. He will hold a 3-inch reach advantage over, or 3-inch height advantage over David Mgoyan and a 4-inch reach advantage. So size will go to Tommy McMillan. The 27-year-old fights out of Arizona, but was originally born in Montana. Of his 8 wins, 3 KOs and 5 subs, all of them coming in round number 1. He was supposed to fight Cody Law actually on this, but Cody Law pulled out. So then we'll step on short notice David Mgoyan. And actually last year he was supposed to fight Austin Bashee on Dana White's Contender Series. That unfortunately never came to fruition, and Austin Bashee ended up fighting someone else and getting a contract. His last win came in April. Tommy has been on a tear, and I'll be very interested to see how he does in this contest as he takes on the man born in Russia, now fighting out of American Top Team in Miami, the 21-year-old born June 25th, 2004. This dude is younger than me. This dude is younger than me. He has 5 KOs and 1 sub of his 7 professional victories. His last win came in May. That is right, David Mgoyan. David, man, looks like a Russian. Let me tell you, that looks like a Russian. I'm torn here, guys, because David trains out of American Top Team. at 21 years old, which is insane. But Tommy, you know, he's been tearing it up on the independent scene. All of his wins coming in round number one. Something just screams to me, though, that David Cepeda on short notice at 21 years old and being slightly more of a favorite, minus 115 to minus 105, does make me lean him more. And Russians historically do have more success on the Contender Series than Americans. But either way, this is probably the biggest flip-flop of the night. I'm going to go with David Magomedov. I will not be surprised if Tommy, like, locks up a submission or knocks him out early in round number one. Like, I will not be surprised at anything that happens in this contest since it's short notice. Since you have two guys, I think this is maybe the best matchmaking they have on the entire card. I am going to go with David Magomedov, but this is a perfect way to open up Season 9, Episode 4. Moving on to our next contest, flyweights. Finally, we get some flyweight action on this season as Antoine Highlight Ho takes on Eduardo Chapolin. Ooh. This one's going to be fun. Oh my gosh, they didn't. Eduardo Chapolin or Eduardo Henrique. Tapology said his name was Eduardo Henrique, but they don't. The UFC stats page says his name is Eduardo Chapolin. What is this guy's name? I have no idea who this guy's name is now, but nonetheless, Eduardo takes on Antoine Ho, and Antoine Ho is actually a veteran of the Contender Series. With a record of 6-1, his lone defeat came last season against Loner Kavanaugh, who knocked him out in 2 minutes and 25 seconds on episode 1. So yeah, Antoine Ho back for some more action. They clearly think the kid is good. He is coming in at +110. The 24-year-old, born in Vietnam, now trains out in Arizona at the MMA lab with Benson Henderson, you know, Killer Gorilla, Mario Bautista, Killer Gorilla, as in Jared Cannonier. A lot of good guys train at the MMA lab. Of his 6 wins, 4 KOs, and 1 sub, and he actually got a 16-second KO in March, which was his last win. And of his 7 wins, all 7 of them have came in the LFA. So Antoine Ho is a staple of the LFA, which you're actually going to hear a lot more about the LFA on today's episode. He fights in the switch stance, and, you know, as for Eduardo, 14-2, he has double the experience, plus 2 more matchups. 1 inch in height and 1 inch in reach for Eduardo, 5'7" to 5'6" and 67-66. The orthodox stance fighter is more of a veteran, 29 years old. He is from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Of those 14 wins, he has 11 finishes, 7 KOs and 4 subs, and of his 2 defeats, he's only ever been submitted once. He is 4-1 in LFA, and he's actually the current flyweight champion with 2 title defenses. His only 2 losses have came to Dana White's Contender Series veterans, and he currently rides a 4-fight winning streak. As we learned on last episode, experience beats any kind of hype, and as we've seen, the guys that have double-digit wins coming in, when they're fighting guys with only 6-7 wins, you're leaning more towards the people who have, you know, the experience. So, Eduardo, whether your last name's Henrique, whether your last name's Chaplin or Chapolin, I'm going to go with Eduardo here, guys. He is the minus 130 favorite. And yeah, you know, I'll say I don't really care that Antoine Ho trains on an MMA lab. This isn't like David and Tommy when they have similar professional records. Eduardo is literally 14-2, and Antoine is 6-1, 7-1, whatever. You know, you always see a discrepancy between Tapology and UFC stats. They need to get on the same page. But I'm happy to see some flyweight action. This is essentially for the LFA Flyweight Championship. Like, I swear, they both fight in the LFA Flyweight Division, so that's pretty funny. But yeah, should be fun, should be action-packed, and there's always fun when the flyweights are going at it on Dana White's Contender Series. Moving up in weight to the lightweight division as Mandel Mango Nalo takes on Samuel Caveira Silva. Mandel is plus 170. Samuel is minus 200. Mandel Nalo 13-3 with 1 no contest. Samuel Silva 13-4 with 1 draw. Both men are 6 feet tall. Both men naturally fight at 155 pounds and 3 inches in reach is the only real thing you can see in advance here for Mandel Nalo, 75-72. Both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. We'll start with Mandel Nalo here, 33. He is the oldest fighter on today's Dana White's Contender Series card. He is fighting out of Montreal, Canada. Actually trains out of the same gym that George St. Pierre used to train at. Pretty fun fact. Of his 13 wins, 13 finishes, 7 KOs, and 6 subs. And in all 3 of his defeats, he's been finished twice by sub, once by submission. He's actually 4-3 in Bellator when he fought there for a time. He's currently on a 4-fight winning streak. This man went pro in 2012. I mean, come on. 2012 was the freaking first year this guy had a professional fight, and 13 years later, he's fighting under the UFC banner. So good stuff for Mandela. True journeyman. His last win did come in August of 2024, so it's been a year. So we'll see if that impacts him to any degree as he takes on the killer from Brazil. That is Caveira Samuel Silva. Samuel is 29 years old from Brazil. Fights out of Brazilian TKO. St. Jim is Brenson Ribeiro, Bruno Ferreira, two guys we are familiar with in the UFC. Of his 13 wins, he has 11 finishes, 6 KOs, and 5 subs. Of his 4 losses, he's been knocked out twice. He is currently 2-0 in LFA and rides a 5-fight winning streak. His last loss, Elvis Brenner in 2017. How about that? How about that? That is actually crazy. He won the Cage Warriors belt in March, so this dude is so legit. And I actually saw the video of him winning that. He was getting beat up on the cage, and he pulled the old Dustin Poirier and jumped the guillotine. And boy, does that man have a tight hold on a guillotine. I think Mando Nala winning would be utterly amazing, but this isn't a time for fun stories. Samuel Silva has been more active, fighting tougher competition. And yeah, I'm sorry, Mandel Nalo. I got to look at both of these guys, and Samuel Silva looks like a scary boy. But hey, we also know that looks don't matter when it comes to fighting. You can be the happiest looking boy. Just look at Sam Alvey smiling and go out there and knock out absolute savages that are jacked. And my light that I use almost just fell on my head, so I almost died while telling you about Samuel Silva and Mandel Nalo. So we'll move on to the second to last matchup of the evening. And in our second to last matchup of the evening, I mean, this is my favorite matchup of the whole night. Middleweight division. I've been excited for this one. I can flat out say it as Theo Hag takes on Cesare Olakajasek. And that is right. You may hear the last name of Olakajasek and you make that sounds familiar. This is Michael Olakajasek's younger brother. Theo Hag, 6-0. Cesare Olakajasek, 15-3. Insane. The most veteran fighter on the card. Holy cow. Holy cow, this dude have experience. 6'3 to 6'2. These are some tall boys. 77-inch reach to 75-inch reach. In favor of Theo Hag, orthodox for Hag, southpaw for Cesare. Theo, plus 260. And the biggest favorite on today's card, the minus 310, Cesare Olakajasek. We'll start with Theo. The underdog is 29 years old from San Jose, California. Of his 6 wins, he has 6 submissions, 4 of which are in round number 1. He's gone 2-0 in Bellator, 2-0 in LFA, and his last win was in January. That's right. Theo Hag will submit you. That's all he does, you know, whether it's a rear naked chokehold, a guillotine, an unorthodox choke. This man loves to take your back, take your face, and just crank it. That is what Theo Hag does. Like, literally, this is the most one-dimensional fighter I've ever seen. Now, obviously, you can break out of that. Ilia Topuria's first 6 or 7 wins were all sub, and now all this dude does is knock the highest world-level fighters out. So, clearly, you can change, but Theo Hag is coming in to get a submission. You can expect that right off the bat. If he doesn't get a submission, then I would be highly shocked. Actually, Theo Hag by knockout is probably the best bet you're going to want to bet if you want to make a lot of money. But I don't have him winning any matchups whatsoever when he takes on the utter killer from Poland. That is Cesare Olakajasek. Fights with Mikel. He's currently on a 3-fight winning streak. Of those 15 wins, 10 finishes, 8 KOs, and 2 subs. Only submitted once in his entire career. That was his only loss by finish. His last win was in February with a 90-second TKO of Tom Breeze. This dude has been a champion in FEN. I don't know if that's the top promotion in Poland, but he is undefeated in there. He's like 8-0 or something. Like, Cesare is so experienced, so good, and if he defends the takedowns like I think he will, I think he gets Theo Hag out of there on the feet. Give me Cesare Olakajasek all frickin' day. I am pumped to see this guy fight. I really am pumped. I do think he's going to come in and be an absolute force to be reckoned with. Cesare Olakajasek over Theo Hag, definitely by knockout. And by the way, for all these fights, I hope for finishes, but low-key, I feel like the Samuel Silva Mandel Nala one might go the distance, and even our main event, which I'm going to bring up here right now, I think this one might go the distance. As we head to the welterweight division to close out episode 4, Jack 50 Cal Condon takes on Jean-Paul Mufasa Lebonsnanyani. Wow, the names on these people, utterly crazy. And you may hear the name Jean-Paul Lebonsnanyani, you'd be like, oh, this dude's clearly French. No, this dude fights out of California. for goodness sakes. Chet Condon, 7-1 is the underdog, +220. Jean-Paul Lebenziani, 8-2 is the -260 favorite. 3 inches a night for Jack Condon, 6'2" to 5'11", and has 3 inches of reach as well. 75 inches to 72 switch stands for both of these gentlemen. Jack Condon, 28 years old from Massachusetts, has 7 of his wins by finish. And by the way, he has 7 wins, 4 KOs, and 3 subs, a 100% finishing rate. And his lone defeat was by submission. So this dude has never been the distance. He is 7-1 in Cage Titans. He's had all of his professional fights there, and he currently rides a 3-fight winning streak. And of his 7 wins, 6 have came in round number 1. So very impressive. Very impressive for Jack Condon coming in out of Cage Titans. I am excited and expect good things out of him here. Now, as for his opponent, Jean-Paul Lemonziani, he is 26 years young from Cali, as we mentioned, on a 3-fight winning streak. Of his 8 wins, 7 finishes, 2 KOs and 5 subs. Both of his defeats have came by knockout, and he is 7-1 in the LFA. His last loss was to Jacoby Jones, who was a Dana White's Contender Series veteran. His only other loss, Spike Carlisle. Both of them UFC vets. Spike Carlisle actually got a couple UFC fights in. I think he won a boxing fight not too long ago. Spike Carlisle is a goofy boy, but this one, pretty close. I'm going off of who's fought tougher people, who's been fighting harder opponents. That's going to be Jean-Paul Lemonziani. Lemonziani? I don't even know how to say her freaking name, but I'm riding with this boy. Plus, you know, I just watched Clash in Paris. We're getting another UFC Paris card. This guy's name sounds French. You already know we're going to ride with Jean-Paul Lemonziani. So this should be a super fun episode. I am pumped for it. I can definitely say that this has a lot to follow up to. So I wouldn't expect the most out of this, but going with David Mungonin, stepping on short notice over Tommy McMillan. Eduardo, you know, over Antoine Ho, I just think experience is going to beat out anyone coming up, but Antoine could always hit him with a quick knockout. Samuel Silva over Mandel Nalo due to experience, due to inactivity for Mandel, certainly that. Cesari over Theo, I mean, Cesario, because Jacek is just a killer in Poland. If he comes over and gets subbed by a guy with only 6 professional wins, that would be utterly hilarious. And the main event is a coin toss, but I am going to go with the JPL Jean-Paul Lemonziani, and I think I just like saying his name. I think we've picked up on that's the only reason that I'm picking him, but yeah, those are your Dana White's Contender Series 9.4 predictions. You guys should let me know who you guys are riding with or who you predicted. This will probably come out early Tuesday. It's going to be my goal, but yeah. With that, let's move into our official recap of WWE Clash in Paris, the latest WWE PLE. And let me tell you, this has certainly shaken the foundation of WWE yet again. Was it good? Was it bad? Let me give you my official thoughts. Now, hands down, this was probably the greatest professional wrestling crowd of all time. Paris really outdid themselves compared to last year. This was insane. This was insane. The stage design, the crowd just chanting throughout everything. This was amazing. The crowd made this event. All right, I know there was some good wrestling here, but the crowd truly made Clash in Paris 2025. And we kicked off the show in the perfect fashion with Roman Reigns and Bronson Reed. And I had picked Bronson Reed to win, as a lot of other wrestling fans had done. But right when we saw Roman Reigns walk out, that man had 2 Ula Fallas on. That man was looking shredded. The crowd was going ballistic. When his entrance went up, the ones went up right away, and these two delivered a perfect match. 22 minutes of pure perfection. Bronson Reed's a star. Bronson Reed is a star. And I saw a lot of people saying, like, oh, Bronson Reed should have won. Like, this, him losing completely ruined his character. But no, none whatsoever. The beatdown he put on Roman Reigns post-match with Bron Breakker, oh, it was so good. And they came out looking more badass than Roman Reigns. Clearly, Roman Reigns has been written off TV for some time. My prediction, he returns for War Games. You know, I know where they're going for War Games, and War Games low-key might cook. We'll have to see, but yeah, we're gonna have to see what goes down there. But Roman Reigns, Bronson Reed was a perfect way to open the show. The entire segment, 52 minutes from what time did it start here? In 1 o'clock in Minnesota to 1:52 was the first match. That was utterly crazy to me, and it was a banger. It was a banger. And then the spots post-match with just Bronson Reed and Bron Breakker refusing to let up, just continually attacking Roman Reigns. It was great. It was great. And yeah, Roman Reigns is written off now. You now have the Vision standing tall, and Bronson Reed and Bron Breakker are going to be facing some consequences from Adam Pearce on Monday Night Raw. Ooh, I wonder what will happen. But perfect way to open the card. This was fantastic. Then we followed it up with the Wyatt Six defending their WWE Tag Team Championships against the Street Profits, and this match was really entertaining. I do have to say, the Street Profits are amazing. They're utterly amazing. They were teasing the breakup between Angelo Dawkins and Montez Ford here, and when they break up, that is going to be action-packed. I think everyone's thinking it's going to be Montez Ford, which usually means it's going to be Angelo Dawkins. Plus, I think Montez Ford would do wonders as a face. Plus, you could always set up like Montez Ford going after the World Heavyweight Championship while Bianca Belair goes after the Women's Intercontinental Championship. I could already see that angle, but the Wyatt Six look dominant here. All right, the Wyatt Six looked dominant, and what you really saw is when the Street Profits were gaining momentum at the end, you start seeing Nikki Cross getting involved, and Eric Rowan, and then Bo Dallas, and they looked really good. So I think both teams came out of this looking phenomenal. They gave them 13 minutes of airtime, and this was great. This was a great matchup. Wyatt Six pick up yet another win. SmackDown Tag Team Division is just peak. It is really peaking. By the way, the Wyatt Six entrance, oh, that French crowd made it amazing. I mean, they were all singing it. They were all having their lights up in the air. This was amazing. It was a great time, and safe to say, success. A success putting this matchup on Clash in Paris. Then we kind of had a doozy, all right? I will say the two doozies for me both do come from kind of like the same center point, but it's not really their fault. So next up, we did have the WWE Women's Intercontinental Championship matchup. And this made it so evident that this should have been on Monday Night Raw. And we should have had AJ Styles and Dominic Mysterio here, because this match didn't deliver. The crowd was dead silent. Not only were they cheering for Becky Lynch, they were booing Nikki Bella. Becky Lynch looked great, as always. Like, that's not shocking. But Nikki Bella, oh man, multiple botches, just had a lot of ring rust. Did pick it up at the end. You know, did pick it up at the end, but the finish was lackluster, just a roll-up pin. And Nikki Bella was hitting Becky Lynch with her own finishers and not putting her away, which doesn't make sense how Nikki Bella could deliver the same finishers and make them hurt more. I don't really know how that would work, but yeah, this went 13 minutes. This went way too long. The 13-minute Wyatt Six and Street Profits match, that was amazing. This one just felt like watching paint dry. I mean, to take the energy out of a crowd is just kind of ridiculous. Kind of ridiculous, but yeah, Becky Lynch wins to no one's surprise. Nikki Bella, we didn't want a Nikki Bella comeback. You know, she's fun to have show up in the Rumble, but yeah, she's just, we knew she wasn't going to win, and something tells you that this feud isn't over, which I think it really should be. So yeah, Becky Lynch, Nikki Bella, a dud. A dud. The rare dud on this absolutely amazing event. But then Rusev, Sheamus, the good old-fashioned Donnybrook matchup. Oh, it stole the show. It stole the show. Fight of the night, if we're going to give any of these fight of the night. You know, like now in UFC does fight of the night. Clearly fight of the night here. These two were brutal. 20 minutes of just war and so many close falls. Like, there's this moment where Sheamus hit a beautiful bro kick. Like, Rusev sold it so well. I thought that was that. And then there's a moment where Rusev slaps Sheamus across the back of the head with this, I don't even know, this Irish cane or something. I thought that was it. And no, he kicked out. Oh my goodness. This was so good. They had like this, I don't even know, it was like a centerpiece where you, like, you'd put a TV. They kept calling it a bar, but I guess it, like, basically, I don't even know what it was, but it's basically like a cabinet of some sort, and Rusev put Sheamus through it. It was awesome. And then Sheamus did a white noise off the top of some whiskey barrels through two tables. Oh, the spot was insane. The crowd made this amazing. And somehow, despite Sheamus losing, you know, this was great for Rusev. They both came out looking fantastic. The crowd won here. The crowd clearly won, and I think with this coming to an end, Sheamus should go into a different program, and I really think we need to send Rusev after a belt. You know, I really think Rusev deserves a belt. I would love to see him go after the World Heavyweight Championship, but that seems kind of out of the picture, so maybe IC, like if Styles beats Dom and Dom goes off to have some stuff going on in freaking I don't know where, Mexico, then I would love to see Rusev and AJ Styles do some battles. But Rusev, Sheamus, the spots in here were crazy. They destroyed themselves. They destroyed the entire ringside, and the crowd was loving it. The crowd was going nuts for this matchup. It was crazy. And I will say the one one thing about this crowd is when they need to get quiet, they got quiet. And when they need to get loud, they got loud. And if this crowd was quiet at any points, there was a reason for it. And they were only quiet at 3 points in this match, and this entire card, I should say. And, you know, we'll talk about that. Well, one of them was the Becky Lynch, Nikki Bella match. The other was the entrance of our co-main event, if you want to call it that, when Logan Paul took on John Cena. They were quiet for Logan Paul because Logan Paul is a heel. And then when John Cena came out, oh my goodness. This thing they do where John Cena's entrance starts with just John Cena in black and white, and then it goes to his freaking colorful entrance. Oh my gosh, that place exploded. The biggest pop of the night, and then they started screaming, "You can't see me, my time is now. I'm the franchise, boy, I'm shining out." Oh my goodness, I was getting hyped. I was on the bus to go work in the same friend. I'm like, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. You got me going, French crowd. In 26 minutes, this match was crazy. This match was everything we wanted, you know. Props to Logan Paul. People were saying he didn't deserve this matchup. We could have had AJ Styles. We could have freaking Brock Lesnar. We could have had so many other guys here. And we have Logan Paul clearly stole the show. They were doing zigzags from freaking Dolph Ziggler. They were doing uppercuts from Cesaro. They were doing AJ Styles clashes. This was crazy. You didn't need Logan Paul doing a high dive onto the table. You didn't need any of that. And then the finish of John Cena hitting a AA and then going back, reversing it, then hitting another AA. And then there were times that I thought Logan Paul had this. Like, Logan Paul was just so close so many times. This was amazing. This was amazing. Match of the night. I know fight of the night went to Rusev and Sheamus, but match of the night, clearly John Cena and Logan Paul. I'm kind of sad it wasn't the main event, but I will say if this had been main event, you probably would have seen a Brock Lesnar appearance, and this didn't need Brock Lesnar whatsoever. I thought he was going to appear at the end. They were having John Cena linger in the ring a bit too long, said hi to the one kid from Brussels, kissed his wife, just kind of threw up some more of his iconic signs to the crowd, and yeah. It was amazing. John Cena, first time in Paris. John Cena, last time in Paris. Oh my gosh, 10 out of 10. And Logan Paul, dude, I'm safe to say, if they give Logan Paul a freaking world championship, I wouldn't even be mad. He's such a great heel. He's such a great performer. Love him or hate him, you gotta give him his props. And he gets props for this. 26 minutes. This match was amazing. And then we reach the main event. Already our fatal four-way for the World Heavyweight Championship. And, you know, we'll go through it all. So first off, fun entrances. You know, one of the themes here, Jey Uso had came out earlier to help Roman Reigns. He'd gotten beaten up by Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. He was injured. Alrighty, you also knew that CM Punk, Jey Uso, and LA Knight, they were all working together against Seth Rollins, but at the same time were fighting each other. This match went 24 and a half minutes. It was really good. There were some cool spots. There was some cool camaraderie. The crowd loved LA Knight. The crowd loved CM Punk, and even Seth Rollins was fantastic in this. Everything was going well. We're getting towards the end of the match. If you know, everyone has had their moments. Everyone has had their near fall. CM Punk had a really close one against Jey Uso, and then CM Punk is saying up to go to sleep on Seth Rollins, and a hooded figure slides in under the ropes, goes in low blow to CM Punk. The fourth member of the Vision is here, and you know, they go to take off their mask. They're struggling with it. They finally take it off, and it's Becky Lynch. And to WWE's dismay, the crowd was silent. The crowd didn't do anything. They literally just looked and went, "Oh, it's Becky Lynch." And I think that was everyone's reaction. There was no shock here. This is Seth Rollins' wife. Like, there's nothing shocking about this whatsoever at all. And yeah, CM Punk is then pinned by Seth Rollins, and that's that. The show ends. And I'll say it was lackluster. You know, there was little to be desired there. You know, I was hoping for an Ija Dragunov, maybe even a Tony D'Angelo, you know, someone like that. They could have done Austin Theory, for goodness sakes. And no, it's Becky Lynch. And I get, you know, here's the thing. It makes sense. That's the thing, and that's not what I wanted. I didn't want the fourth person to make sense. I wanted it to be someone to build up. I want it to be like Bronson Reed, when it was like, Bronson Reed's in this group, what? Or Bron Breakker, like, oh my gosh, they're playing together, but it's Becky Lynch. You know, there's going to be a power couple, and I don't really like it. You know, I can understand it, but it doesn't mean I have to really like it. But I will say, that the addition of Becky Lynch is building up to something massive going down at NXT, well, not NXT, at Survivor Series War Games. And that is going to be when it's the Vision with their three members and Becky Lynch. And I presume they're going to get another male member, recruit someone of some sorts, and they're going to be taking on LA Knight, Jey Uso, Roman Reigns, I presume, CM Punk, and then I think they're going to have a very odd female element here with AJ Lee. I think the only reason Becky Lynch has joined this group is that they can bring back AJ Lee and have a feud going on there, because AJ Lee returning is going to give an unheard of pop, okay? It is going to be the biggest woman's return pop of all time. It's going to be up there probably with CM Punk, with John Cena, with Brock Lesnar. It's going to be ridiculous, but I will say after such an amazing clash in Paris that it was a dull ending. All right, it was a dull ending. And like I said, there were three moments when this card was quiet. One was for Logan Paul's entrance, just because he's a really good heel. The other two did involve Becky Lynch. So the fourth Vision member fell short with a lot of people, including myself. But I will say overall, this card was an absolute success. It was amazing, and I can't wait for them to come back here in the future. But yeah, that's all I got for my recap of WWE Clash in Paris. I have a lot to do today, guys. I gotta get going. There's no time for me to sit here and jibber-jabber and talk about things, but yeah, I will say it was a fun time. It was such a fun time watching this, you know, viewing the card, and I'm excited to see the future of everything. But yes, make sure to check out the Ultimate Fighter, Dana White's Contender Series going down this Tuesday. We have lots of new fights going down, and of course, later this week, your UFC Paris predictions. That's right, Paris is just taking over. They're getting all the events. TKO loves Paris. So, ladies and gentlemen, go have an amazing week. Jesus loves you, and I'll see you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.